SafetyFM.com with Jay Allen. Changing safety cultures, one broadcast and one podcast at a time.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods. Because listen, it is always a good time when you and I get to hang out. There is no doubt about that in my mind. Especially when I get to see you on a Tuesday or a Friday, or we get to interact on a Tuesday or a Friday, depending on what's going on. So listen, I have to tell you, this is the gift that keeps on giving, actually coming out of that Global Safety Innovation Summit that took down place in Wollongong. Oh yes, when good old Wollongong. It was a good time in Australia, I'm not going to lie there, in regards of everything that was going on. So this is going to be another episode featuring a speech that took place during the summit down in Australia. And I want you to sit back today and relax and take a listen to this one. I think you're going to really enjoy it because it is one of those speeches that when you take a listen to this particular presentation, there is a lot of information to unpack here. So I want to make sure that I'm clear about that. So Mabel Laughlin is our guest today in regards to that. Now, unfortunately, I did not get the opportunity to talk to her directly after her speech to have something to give you after she did her presentation, but I still want you to pay a lot of attention on what's going on this particular episode. So sit back and relax, and let's go ahead and get it started right now on Safety FM with Jay Allen.
I'm really not a force of nature. I'm really wrecked. I'm very, very, very wrecked. I would love to say it's just jet lag, but I had way too much fun with everybody because this is like a reunion for some of us who've been connecting over 10 years trying to do some of these things. I'm sorry about my voice as well. It's also going because I was way too quiet last night as well. I'm speaking today on behalf of the company I work for, Spitzer. And it's actually a seafaring story. I really wanted to do this. It's a seafaring story, one of myths. An anchor that grounded us with a strong foundation. What was next? I can't remember what the next bit was. Our North Star that guided our direction. And also the wind and waves. So the wind that drove us forward and progressed, but also the waves and challenges that we've had along the way. And the focus of what I'm speaking about is how we have engaged our leaders in this journey and what was important. There's a lot of engage your leaders and get them to do this and that, but what are the behaviours? What's expected and what needs to happen? And we haven't won. There's loads of good news and bad news along the way. It's always five steps forward and two steps back, and I think that's everybody's experience. But I'll just share some of the things that we've been doing. Just starting on those myths, this was, I suppose, my own personal journey because I come from environmental science, came into health and safety and process safety, background in chemical and pharmaceutical and high-risk engineering, actually engineering consultancy. And I look back at my career and some of the things on risk assessments and investigations and, oh yeah, human error, there you go. So some of this was quite challenging even for me when I got into this at first. So human error as a cause, that this could be a conclusion, was something that challenged me personally. How to prevent serious incidents, that lovely triangle, guys. So the triangle, that if we look at all our minors and we deal with our minors, we'll prevent the major. And it's a complete myth. Outside of single hazard categories. You can't just look at number of minors and think that you're doing something about someone wearing PPE and you're going to stop fatalities. And the last is our other lovely symbolic cheese. We love the symbols, don't we? This idea that we can know all the barriers, know all the trajectories, and actually it's non-compliance that will actually cause incidents. They were the three things that were challenging for me, and what was really mind-blowing then, obviously you've seen it before, everyone's been talking about it, was the blue and black line. This idea that safe work as imagined is not the same as work as done, that work is varying all the time, and it's varying all the time because of, I call them performance-influencing conditions, human factors, performance-influencing factors, different traditions call it different things, but effectively it's different demands, pressures, resources in people, place, procedures, processes, plant and equipment. Just this variability happening all the time, and it's not to be judged. It just is what it is. But that really helped me, because then I could see where we needed to focus, and all the rest of the theory and research made sense to me, because it meant that we should be focusing on where our highest risks were. Where are things varying, where risks, serious risks exist, and where are they almost meeting? Because that's where we need to focus our attention. We don't need to just wait for the incidents. We can learn from success. So when everything goes perfectly right, in spite of issues, in spite of them, how did people do that? Because there's something to learn there as well. And also learn when we have our incidents. Also learn, and learn in a better way about variability. So I came into the business, into the parent company of Switzer at the time, and they had what everyone has talked about. They saw the plateau. They had reduced lost time injuries by 50% over 10 years, and they were still being surprised by fatalities. So they needed a new focus. And at that time, I was Switzer's business partner. And really, the key areas were around needing to learn from the front line, around performance influencing conditions or variability or whatever it is you want to frame it, how you framed it in your company. Focus on serious risks. Stop thinking that addressing minors are going to reduce your majors. Make safe work easier for people to do. Make safe work easier. If things are tricky, difficult, they're less likely to happen. People won't follow the rules if they're hard to follow. People are time pressured, and kind of having empathy towards that. And then engage and scale with leadership. And this came in through safety differently. So it was about this: safety is not a bureaucratic accountability. Safety is ethical leadership. So the anchor. So this was really important. When we came into the business, it's quite an, into the parent company, it's quite an action-oriented and results-driven company. Our boss had execute, 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 literally written on his board. And we were being told, deliver a leadership program. We went, no. And it was like Braveheart, for some of you have heard me say this. Hold the line. Hold the line. We're not going to throw anything out there. We need to know what we're dealing with. We need to understand the core problem. So in order to anchor this, we used a project method called the Innovation Double Diamond. This is design thinking for other people, where we actually went out and we did it like a sprint. This didn't take long, but three of us split up and we explored the leadership landscape to really understand that problem space. Understand who are these leaders? What are their motivations? What is their experience with safety? What are they being asked to do? And there were six brands across the company. Switzer was just one of them. But we did this for all of them. And I had the part of actually benchmarking externally. So for some of you in the room, I remember having phone calls and just doing like hour interviews on how does safety change under new view philosophy. And that was the whole idea. We were trying to understand the core problem. We didn't want to just... I hate the idea of sheep-dipping people in leadership programs for stuff that's not real or relevant. And I have an academic background in teaching as well. And the one thing we know is adult learners need to see themselves in whatever you put out there. If it's not relevant to them, if they can't see themselves, they're not going to learn it and they're not going to live it. So we needed to understand who they were in order to do that. And only after that, then, did we move into the solution space. And that was really mapping out what different businesses needed. There was no one product that went out across the business. Actually, on one side of the business, they had a two-day course, which resulted at the end of that in developing a plan for their area. There was e-learning developed. There was other stuff we did. Stefan, sorry, I'm just looking at my boss here. If I say anything wrong, I'm sorry. I love you. But we launched a new leadership visits process. You remember when we did some leadership training around that? So it was different solutions to different problems, basically, is the point. But we were able to focus on the right behaviours that we wanted to see. And then we could get into the delivery space and prioritise. So this was kind of what we looked at when we were exploring leadership. So we need to have empathy towards what our leaders are doing, what they're motivated by, what their focus of attention is. Now, I know this is blurry because I can't get the original anymore, but this is how we carved it out. So we asked and did interviews with HR, with leaders across the whole business and also externally to understand the business context that they were in across these six brands, the leadership landscape from hire to fire to promotion, you know, what were the safety touch points there, and also their safety journey, what were they expecting to do, what had they had before, and then obviously external benchmarking as well. So that was the first thing. That was anchoring it in reality is the point. We were trying to anchor what we wanted to develop in the reality for these leaders. The second thing was we anchored it in the company values because the company values are strong and they look amazing. I literally joined this company because of those company values. If you're new view and you look at those, isn't it? Can you see it? Why you might be attracted? And they're strong and they're strongly held as well. And in some meetings you'd go to, you'd say, well, that's not very upright or that's not demonstrating constant care. So that was something that was important to me. But that's, we were able to use that language. This is a language that was familiar. And that's why the program ultimately became called the Leading with Care program, which was perfect in different levels as well. Our North Star was obviously going to be rooted in new view because they had brought in a safety differently strategy, and that's literally what our team's role was. And how this worked then was we were able to anchor this back into the language that the business was used to. We couldn't go out with safety differently principles. Actually, I worked with a behavioural psychologist and we tested a huge amount of words in the business and none of them landed and none of them would have worked. Capacity in our business does not work, which is ironic because it was a logistics company. Capacity wouldn't work. So this is where we landed. Our leadership principle was we lead with care. Leaders engage, listen and respond to the front line. Your response matters. What other people would know as the capacity one was we learn and adapt. Staying ahead of serious risks drives our improvements. Being prepared matters. And our people are the experts. We learn from each other to grow our culture. Your voice matters. And they became embedded in all our strategy and what we were doing. Everything was linked back to those three principles in what we were trying to achieve. And that really guided what we wanted to do. And this is how this is framed. This is something that everyone in the company is familiar with. Our principles, our vision, and what we don't have a zero harm strategy. I think it's, you know, everyone understands that for us, it does have an impact on, you know, the corruption that Greg talked about earlier. I'm not saying just in our company. I've seen it in every company I've worked in. And I really did not want to have that again. I just don't want it. The metrics manipulation, the gaming of the numbers, the is it an LTI, is it not, the underreporting. And like, it's so funny for us. We're in a global team. We can see so clearly which regions are not reporting anything, which they are. And none of it is real. And this is, you know, it's happening in all your companies. So for us, it's every day is a safe day. That's what we want for everybody and how we communicate this. It's also part of how we deliver our business strategy because there's strong links with what we want to achieve in this space as well, not just from a safety perspective, but also because part of our strategy is to have thriving people. And it's linked with our passion for customers. So it's this idea that safe people will be thriving people, will have passion for customers, and happier employees will mean happier customers in how they're engaging with everyone every day. And this is how this looks like then, because this is what we do. It's sustainable marine services. It's towage. Towage delivery, decarbonisation, innovation. So we call ourselves pragmatic innovators. This was all amazing for me as well because this was a company that always, you'd go into other places talking about new view and there's clothes. No, we've always done this. And you'd have to fight every battle just to get even small things changed. Whereas in Switzerland, they've always been open to new thinking, new ideas. I remember the conversations with Stefan, even when I was business partnering from the parent company, you know, what benefits will this be and how would that work and what might we do? There was just always an openness there. And that is so in their culture in terms of what they do. The thriving people side, this is what people in culture are driving. again, I hope you can see there's total alignment with what we're looking for from a safety perspective. So people are safe, seen and connected, that there's passion and purpose, that people have growth support. And in order to achieve that, the work that's happening is all about better listening, how to support people, how to promote growth and how to respond to needs. So in terms of doing safety differently, just before I go back into some of the leadership stuff, this is kind of some of the stuff that we've been doing. I'm sure there's something wrong. Sorry, Stefan. But they started in 2019. They went out to all employees as part of Global Safety Day and asked everybody, what is the biggest risk where you feel the most unsafe? And they got huge numbers of insights from doing that. And from that, the first thing they did is actually resource critical risk improvements. So they put, you know, and the marine industry is insane for not innovating, actually. For not innovating, like a ship is a ship and always has been. I remember, you know, being in Maersk and having a similar conversation. Technology will upgrade, but a lot of the stuff is still quite manual. You know, a lot of the strategies that we would have always, I would use in every company, I would just look at where are we depending so heavily on procedural controls or administrative controls. And then it was such simple decision making. I just need to move that up the hierarchy of risk control. I just need to move all those administrative up to be engineering controls. You cannot do that a lot of the time in the marine industry. You can't do that. It's not easy. It literally is. Are you in the line of fire? Are you standing in the wrong place? Are you holding the rope in the wrong way? And there is no easy answers for some of this. But they took this on, and they, I have said it wrong, actually. I can see what I did wrong. Sorry, Steph. They put in, you know, physical fixes on the berths, on the piers. They upgraded all the emergency equipment and the man overboard equipment across the whole fleet. They brought in cold water suits to fail safely for not if somebody falls in the water, but when. They did a huge amount. So that was their first step. After that, obviously, we were looking at better metrics around the same time as well to look at progress and impact, not just injury. There's no perfect metrics. It is the Holy Grail, just letting you know. But I just fundamentally disagree with measuring safety by incidents or measuring safety by injuries, because safety is actually about how well we're managing risks. But then the word risk is a problem itself as well. So that's why I'm saying it's like a holy grail. But we measure leadership visits, action closure, drills, and we also look at learning teams for high potential events. And high potential events in the sense that all our incidents that happen, we put them through the lens of were there good controls in place or were we lucky? Could there have been a slight and reasonable, what is the slight difference that could have led to a more serious event? And when we ask ourselves these kind of ready reckoner questions, it becomes very clear to us this actually was a high potential. So as an example, we had a recent one where on paper it's minor asset damage. But actually when we ask ourselves those questions and we just dig into the context a little bit by asking those questions, it was, you know, an operation with a trainee in a bow-to-bow manoeuvre, which is one of our critical risk manoeuvres. So we needed to learn, and that's when we jump in and do learning teams. Leadership engagement is hugely important, so we have the vessel visits. Stripped it back, we're not asking them to do inspections. We're asking them to go and have that conversation, build trust. You know, where is safe work difficult? How can I help? What do you need? And we tried to, when we rolled this out, we actually did a couple of hours training with all of them about how to have these conversations. Because like what you heard earlier, it's not natural to everybody. And it was so interesting when we did do that training. Honestly, it was even teaching them how to ask questions. And I had two groups of leaders. So let's say you have a marine background, you've got an operational background leader, and we would have, let's say, a more commercial leader, and they're all on this call. And I would say, you know, here's the scenario, ask the questions. The ones with the same background, with the marine background, would always ask closed questions. Why is he standing why is he standing 1 meter from the winch, or whatever it might be? And you know, I would have to coach into that space then and say, no, you're asking really closed questions. You've got your assumptions and you're just testing your assumptions by those questions that you're asking. Whereas on the other side, we had commercial leaders who were really nervous going, I don't know how to have a chat because I don't have a marine background. Because it's difficult being vulnerable as well. So by them being on this, they were able to ask these questions. They were able to learn how to ask these questions and know that, no, it's actually what you're doing is right. Just ask your who, what, when, where, why questions. Because you'll have a better conversation from doing that. It's just giving them the confidence, I suppose, to be able to do that. So that was the kind of leadership side. And I'll get on to the actual Lead with Care programme. And then other things we're doing, simplifying back our management system. So we have a Fit for Crew HMS project that's been ongoing. And that's really putting employee competence. We're stripping out some of the stuff that I used to call it, can I say the safety of the calculator? Is that okay? Yeah. Because it reminded me of someone in the room who, no, I know who it is. It's Oscar Hildeberg. He's the former Danish Marine Accident Investigation Board. Actually, he works with us now. Stefan managed to get him to come work for us. But he talks about the role of management systems. And he talks about the fact that they have different purposes. So don't be under the illusion that it's just a safety purpose. And I literally saw this in action. I was went to a port and I'm talking to the manager about our global projects and I'm sense checking them with him and I'm asking him his views and I tell him we're simplifying the management system and that all these work activities that have risk assessments associated with them where there's different timelines, but boys basically have to administrate these every time. And I told him we're going to reduce administration by 60%. We're focusing on what's critical, what's important. And for a lot of the routine stuff that's within the competence of the crew and within the scope of what the vessel does every day, we're not going to ask them to do risk assessments and spend time on paperwork all the time. And one of the managers said, but we won't know that they're doing them then. Like, we have to keep them. How will we know that? I said, they're not doing them anyway. They're not doing, you think they're doing them. No one's doing them. Yeah, but they're all in the system. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Do you really think they're going through them and discussing them with everyone? It's all an illusion. But he kept pushing and he was like, yeah, but when something happens, they'll have signed. I said, no, that's not how the regulator works. Yeah, but how does the regulator work? I said, the regulator goes and you'll say, here's the sign. And then they'll go down and have a conversation with the boys and the crew going, did you discuss this? Nah. Did you just sign? Yeah. So they get to the same outcome anyway. But that wasn't the point of this. The point of this was his level of fear at losing stuff because it's a comfort blanket sometimes for managers. And there was a calculator sitting in front of him. And this, I was going at this for about 20 minutes. 20 minutes trying to tell him, like really convince him of this. And eventually I just said, see that calculator, Rod? Do you see it? I said, all I'm saying is, can you use that? Are you able to use the calculator? And he went, yeah. I said, we had a procedure for that and you would have had to do a risk assessment for your calculator. All I'm saying is we're saying we trust you to be able to use that calculator, Rod. Is that okay? So I'm calling it the calculator story because, you know, some of these are battles that you will face. And marine is interesting. I have too many stories and I can see I only have about 6 minutes. But anyway, marine is interesting as well because there's all these terms that, you know, you don't hear in other industries, and there's different forms of it. So it's this thing of good seamanship, and they'll all talk about, they'll say it about themselves, I lost situational awareness. So this is a scenario where there was a high potential, where someone, I think, either caught or lost a finger, and we went and did a learning team. And the master himself said, I lost situational awareness. And I get annoyed with these blanket terms that are actually quite meaningless. I said, what do you mean situational awareness? Like, what was it? What actually happened? He said, well, I was actually manoeuvring forward. But the guy was at the wrong bollard. And I said, had you discussed it? Yeah, we had done all the discussion about the birthing plan and we need to be here. But it was just a mistake on his part. But I lost situational awareness. And he said, but you're manoeuvring forward. That's your job. And you think he's there, but he's just in the wrong place. What's the situation that you lost here? And it ended out, he just couldn't see. He said, well, I'm manoeuvring forward. But I didn't know that he'd gone to the wrong bollard, even though we talked about it. And I was like, could you see him? And he went, no, because I'm facing this way. And I said, well, did you need eyes in the back of your head then? And he said, no, I don't have eyes in the back of my head. I said, Grant, do you have a camera? And he says, no, we don't have a camera on this. I said, so you have a mirror? And he went, no. well, how do you do? How would you see him then? He said, I'd have to turn around. And when you turn around, that's what you see, right? That's it. The engine funnel is coming up at the side of the vessel. I said, you must be magic. So I said, do you think it's visibility rather than situational awareness? Yeah, I couldn't see. I said, well, will we get your camera? Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, we'll talk to the boys. We'll get you a mirror. So these blanket things that just don't work. This is coming from a learning team. And I'm not going to go back into all the learning team. You've heard so much about it now at this stage. But this is the choice that we're making when we go into learning teams. You know, this was a simple incident, again, where somebody had not held the rope tails that keep your hands away from the rope eye. And that's the old rope tail in the middle, down the bottom, by the way. And usually, you know, the old way you'd say it's violations or non-compliance or that they're the cause of it. He did it to himself. He didn't hold it right. He held the eye and he should have held the rope tail. We did a learning team on that. And I said, I just took one look at it. And I said, that rope tail is really small. And the rope is quite big. I said, and that would be under tension. Yeah, it would be under tension sometimes. And the wind would be blowing. The vessel might be moving slightly. I said, do you have the dexterity like to actually get it up over the bollard? Not really. I said, so that rope tail is fairly useless then. They were like, yeah. And literally as I'm speaking, the guys got up and drew on the board. Couldn't we do this thing with the two handles? And couldn't we do this and put it on instead of the original rope tail? Yes. Yeah, grand. We'll do that. And we're able to get that solution out across the business. So there'll always be things that if we just involve them a little bit more, they're suffering the consequences of our poor system design, in this case, just rope design, something that no one ever thinks about. I don't know why I put accountability, but I want you to know as well that we still have... I'm sorry, I know, I'm really tired. Really tired. You can see, this is some of the situations our tugs have to face. This is nothing to do with us, by the way. This is sometimes our customers, our ports that we have to deal with. See the key condition. Now, that's not okay for me. That infuriates me. But we can't do anything about that, because that's where we're told we can go to berth. But we had a man overboard, and we went and did a learning team. And I wouldn't even walk down the grate. Actually, I was walking down the grate, and I said, boys, I'm not really happy doing this. And they were like, either are we. We don't do it either. I was like, thanks a lot. Like, I'll be in a minute now. But anyway, I want you to know there still is room for this. And it's back to some of the points that Zoe and the team have talked about in terms of forward accountability. This was a late reported incident, a late reported man overboard event. And everything had been fine, but it was late reported by 9 months. It was found as a note in the book. But I'd been coaching with some of the Marine Standards guys. And I was like, let's go try and learn about this first or whatever. So we'd done the learning team. And he was, you know, it was like it's straight away discipline. I was like, no, just, when you have the chat with him, like when you're doing that chat, just see what he says. See what he says. Because the forward-looking accountability means that he will come into the room and say, I totally messed up. That was such a big mistake that I didn't report that. Because the chief engineer who went in, who was 60... Right, and I'm even uncomfortable with this. So he was 60, it was cold water, it was spring in Scandinavia. No, it's all of that. He should have had a medical assessment. Instead of that, they just got him back onto the vessel and headed off and finished the operation. Do you know what I mean? Even for me, that's showing no care towards your own staff member. So you're always kind of, you know, you have your comfort factor, you don't. But anyway, in that situation, when they went to have the conversation with him, there was no apology. He didn't care at all. He was like, I used to be a deep sea fisherman. That was nothing. So we got him out. He was fine. That's somebody not being accountable. But if someone comes in and is able to say, yeah, I'm after messing up, totally messed up. That's an accountable person. Would you agree? That is an accountability. They're giving you an account. And they can see where they're wrong and they've learned. So you don't need to discipline in that space then. But in this case, we did. Because it was not right. And he didn't show accountability. I'm way over. So I had lovely videos to wow you with videos of some of the leaders' stories. But I just want to talk to you just for a minute about some of the behaviours that matter. This was kind of what we, this was what guided what we did across the whole company in terms of leading with care. These were the behaviours. These may not be the ones that matter in your company, but these ones were the ones that mattered in ours, that came out of that exploration when we were working to explore what the issues were and what they experienced. And these were all embedded as part of a Lead with Care program. So as I said, there's different parts to it. But this year we rolled out an e-learning version where we upskilled our Marine Standards team in coaching. And they did 15 minutes of e-learning. And then throughout the month, Marine Standards, who were seeing and engaging with the leaders, could have a good conversation with them about how they were transferring the learning into their daily work. And pure practical stuff, scenarios, putting them into situations to be able to see how different behaviours work in practice. And these are some of the toolkits that go with them that were requested by leaders. These are just some of the names of them. It's not actually the tools themselves, but just to give you an idea of some of the things that are there. And for some, it has been a game changer. I'm going to leave you with the General Manager of Australia. General Manager East, thank you. This is Dylan, because this is where psychological safety came in as well, that they create the conditions for people speaking up. They create the conditions for reporting. That's why it's important to me. You will not have a reporting culture if we don't have leaders creating the conditions where it's safe to speak up. And we ran a whole campaign on this as well last year. So I'll let you just watch this, and I think I'll leave it then. I'm running over, haven't I?
Hi, my name is Dylan Sheehan. I'm General Manager for the East Coast of Australia. I'd like to share a situation that occurred a couple of years ago in Sydney when I was port manager there. It was a Friday afternoon, and the vessel had just come back in alongside after docking a container ship in Port Botany. And the tug was tied up. Everyone thought that the vessel had been shut down and there was some maintenance being performed by one of the engineers. Unfortunately, at that time, what we didn't realize is the engines hadn't been shut down. And in the wheelhouse, the engineer had bumped the control, causing the tug to come off of the berth and parting the mooring lines and almost making contact with the adjacent tug in the berth next to it. The crew acted swiftly and got the tug back alongside, safely tied it up, and then immediately contacted the shore team to advise of the situation. It was at that point I feel like I realized that there was a bit of a disconnect, and we hadn't created that safe space for the crew, because a lot of the feedback we were getting was very cautious and guarded. There was a feeling that the accusations would follow, and that was something that we needed to address quite quickly. So we had called the local health and safety representatives from the Sydney operation, who are other crew members, and they attended the site. And I think it was at that point where we had a chance to speak with the health and safety representatives and just sort of debrief and say, this is not about accusations. This is not about pointing the finger or blaming. This is about making sure that our colleagues are comfortable and safe in the first instance. And once we created that safe space for the crew, I actually felt it was when that point that we saw a shift, not only for that incident and that review of that specific event, but also in Sydney, where there was an understanding that we're all in this together, and that, you know, we have a common goal, and that's obviously to keep our colleagues safe initially, and of course to deliver a service for our stakeholders. I guess in review of the incident, we then escalated it to a high potential that we did a working group with Copenhagen and the Marine Standards team. And I thought, again, that review was very indicative of the environment that we had created. Initially going in even to the hypo review, there was, you know, some tight-lipped crew members in the room that didn't want to share a whole lot. But I think as we started to go through it, the team, the Marine Standards team in Copenhagen, really did a great job to demonstrate that this is not a finger-pointing exercise. This is not a situation where we're looking to put someone's job or career on the line. This is very much about understanding the root causes of why this happened, and can we identify lessons learned so that doesn't happen again. And through the following 4 or 5 hour session that we held with Copenhagen, we had some really good learnings that came out of that. And the feedback I had from the crew members as a result was that that was one of the best opportunities they had in their time in Switzerland. I'm talking colleagues who've been here for 15, 20 years, that they really felt listened to and cared for. And I think what was then demonstrated across the crew was that, yeah, this is something where we do put safety at the forefront. And it's not just words, it's actions. And we demonstrated that throughout the process. And it wasn't just the shore staff. It was the way the crew handled themselves. It was the way the HSRs handled themselves. It was the way that marine standards, both locally and in Copenhagen, conducted themselves through the high potential review. And I think that really sort of set the stage for a different level of psychological safety for the crew in Sydney.
How amazing is that? Like, that's when I start going, yes, yes, we're getting it. I'm going to leave it there. I have other stuff. You can see the slides. It hasn't all been perfect. Just know that. No, it's not for anybody. We have a very compliance-based industry. We're at the bottom of the supply chain, so there's so many customer requirements, and they're all different. But you can see these slides again in future. Thank you, everybody.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.